Welcome to the Gym Lords Podcast, where we talk to real gym owners and share their stories, their trials, and what's working for them right now. To apply to be a guest on this podcast, click the link in the description. Hope you enjoy and subscribe.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Gym Lords Podcast. I will be your host today. My name is Joe Fitzgerald, and joining us on the show is Mr. Jorge Diaz of Flash Boxing Gym, coming to you from L.A. out in California. Jorge, what's going on, my man? How are you today?
How's it going? I'm pretty good.
It's going well over here. I'm excited to dive into the business side of this. But Jorge, before we get too caught up in the strategies and the tactics and all of the things that come with running a business, first and foremost, man, tell us about how this whole thing came to be. What made you want to open a boxing gym?
I think like anybody that wants to do something great or wants to get involved in something major, you know, at that time, my mentality was basically opening a gym, you know, running a gym. I was always a gym rat, you know, and I love being in the gym. I would have ended up being in the gym early in the morning, left in maybe late early afternoon, came back in later in the afternoon, and then left late at night. So that was the whole progression. And then I started loving to train people and teach people and see people develop. You know, even though I was fighting as an amateur, this is when I started as an amateur. You know, I like to basically teach the kids and see them gravitate to a certain extent. Even though I think I was still immature now going looking into it, but that's how I ended up basically developing my social skills with people and parents, and then I started really growing into it. Because I was a very, very shy kid, per se.
Yeah. It's interesting how boxing can really be the vehicle, not just for health and fitness, because obviously that's what we're here to talk about, but like your point, really personal development just as much. It's that kind of intangible that we can't really measure. And so tell us a little bit about Flash Boxing as it exists today, right? Tell us about the business. How do you serve people?
I kind of keep it very old school. You know, for the average person that doesn't box, so I basically try to develop them to a certain extent, depending on their goals. So meaning let's just say you're somebody that wants to spar, but you really can't get injured because, you know, you're in a platform that people got to see you physically. They don't want to see you with a black eye. You got to go to meetings. So I kind of cater to that because I've trained a lot of actors per se. And sometimes a couple singers, and sometimes you got to avoid, like, singers can get their nose broken because it kind of changes their vocal cords and their whole aspect of their voice. Actors, of course, they can be all bruised up and going to a show and to a filming show.
Audition.
And all of a sudden, you know, audition. Yeah, exactly. And have a black eye. So, and then they got to put makeup all over it. So, you know, I kind of catered to that. So basically I try to throw somebody with experience, depending on what type of experience, and I throw them with somebody that doesn't have experience, just because the person with experience is going to work on certain things. So I kind of give them that avenue so they get that experience of how to be with somebody that makes them feel a little bit powerless, per se.
Sure. And so my understanding is that this is done in kind of group classes, right? It's more than just one-on-one. How many people do you have in an average size class?
In a class, the thing is, we don't really set classes. I get people in groups. The ones I see that are developing, I might get the experienced ones, the intermediate, and the ones that are beginning. The beginners, I might have them working on certain things, certain technical punches, as long as they stay consistent. Now, the ones that have been here a little longer or are willing to get in the ring or willing to do a little bit more extra, I might throw them in with a couple of the amateurs or a couple of pros and see what they can work on. Maybe I might just do like a group sparring, have one on a tire. You've probably seen that in the Creed movie when they're boxing in the tire.
Yeah,
I might throw you probably you did one. I do one with just the left hand, while one of them is being a little aggressive. The other one's just working the left hand. The experienced guy, kind of learning how to control, and then the other one's just group drills, defensive drills, countering drills. They have a full headgear, mouthpiece, and everything. But I try to teach it so it becomes a natural reaction, because for most people who never boxed, it becomes a thinking process. You know, for somebody like me who's been doing it for so long, it just seems, it becomes a reaction. I see, I look, and I take advantage of my opportunity. For somebody that doesn't have experience, it might take them a little time to get that development. But it has happened.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you and I both know that the last 18 months in this industry have been as difficult as it can be when it comes to running a business. And so you guys have certainly taken a hit in the membership. Tell us a little bit about your membership before the pandemic, and tell us about your membership.
Before the pandemic, we're doing well. You know, just, you know, it's seasonal. You know, during the summer, we get a lot of kids, you know. We get a lot, because, you know, the whole, you know, I the site where I'm at from in LA, you know, there's a lot of, it's a big Hispanic, Latino community. So, you know, the whole thing is about boxing. A lot of them want to fight. A lot of them want to do this. A lot of them want to take it to the next level. They, you know, especially they see things like how Canelo, Floyd Mayweather have done. So I put them through a program that I develop them, but I also got to see commitment, because sometimes you put a lot of commitment. It's a lot of time, a lot of time and effort put into a kid. You know, I've trained people now for like 24 years, and I've seen how people have developed in time. I've seen people that don't want to fight develop, and I see people that do want to fight. So there's levels to this.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's like going to school. That's how I look at it. You start first in elementary, you start in kindergarten, then you graduate high school. Then if you decide to go to college or et cetera, you know, that's, it's really what you decide as an individual. For me, I'm just guiding people, you know, because some people, I think, get in the mindset if you ended up training with certain trainers, like you're with Freddie, you're with, you know, the late Emmanuel Stewart, you know, you're just going to get the magic touch of them and become top of the line. No, it just, is that realistic? You know, it's a lot of time and effort. I used to work with Joe Goosen. He's probably a better known trainer that he trained, like Michael Nunn. I had known Joe since I was 11 years old. So he was one of the guys that, one of the big trainers that I ended up knowing as a kid. Then it was Freddie. So I've been around a few of one of the biggest names. So, and it's a journey. But as training, it's a journey.
I'm sure, Jorge, that there are a whole lot of gym owners out there, whether they're in the boxing space or not, that resonate with that sort of, it's a journey. It can be a grind. It can be a challenge. And so for you guys, how are you going to rebuild that membership to get back to where you were pre-pandemic? Talk to us about the marketing that goes into getting new people in the door.
Marketing is different avenues. So right now, I think I've told you, we since you saw the website, we used to do strength conditioning classes. Since we parted ways with the trainer, that kind of slowed down. So, like I said, I have somebody in mind that I might bring in. I'm bringing in. So, me and him, I'm being communication, and we're talking about how many classes he wants to do, because I want to make it. I want to make it to a certain extent that it is a running gym on its own. Number one. Number two. Right. If I need to expand, I will expand. It just depends where. Because the thing is, in LA, like, I got a 2,000 square foot, 22 square foot gym, and I'm paying a little over $5,000 a month. So those are the numbers that I got to challenge. That's number one. Number two, pricing. I just raised my pricing, and that's hard for people, especially in where I'm at. I'm in Van Nuys, California. It's growing. It's becoming a little bit, it's kind of like, the market, the property value is going up for some reason, because, you know, they're just trying to overturn the city. So
yeah,
when I grew up, this was kind of like the ghetto, or where I'm at especially. So, but yeah, it's growing. There's a lot of people coming in. And then I get a different, I have a different, and instead of being all Hispanic, most of my clients, I got a diversity of clients. I got Armenian, yeah. I got Russian, Asians, I got a diversity. So that's another thing is in boxing gyms, that growing up, you got to really, it becomes more of a competitive part, because boxing gyms for me was recreational. It wasn't fitness. Now, since Tai Bo and all these classes, they try to make it into a whole marketing.
Boxer size, right?
Boxer size, yes. But the problem with that is that some people get caught up with the fakery, and sometimes people could get hurt. That's the other issue I have with boxing. Yeah.
Well, then Jorge, I mean, you talked to us about 2,200 square feet. You have to keep in mind, rent is going to be due every month. We've got this $5,000 check going out. And so keeping pace with rent, as well as payroll and paying yourself at the end of the day, do you guys have a target in mind? Hey, we want to be at 150 members. Hey, we want to be at 200 members. Do you guys have a goal?
You know, that's the goal, is always to have more people in the gym.
More.
That's the goal. More people in the gym. But at the same time, sometimes I used to have, when this is post COVID, this is before COVID. So I used to have up to 35, 45 people here at once. We've had that. So when I started by myself, because I'm basically here, I live at the gym. I'm here 70 hours a week. So I'm practically here every day, day in and day out.
Right.
So when I used to do everything by myself, we didn't really do the classes. I used to kind of like get people to routines, teach them the basics, and develop, number one. Number two, started with the pad work, start teaching them how to understand their balance, how to throw punches, and how to walk. Then the third stage, you know, I said it's not really the final stage, but I'll call it the final stage, is sparring. Worst case scenario, I'm going to say somebody like an actor, somebody that can't get hit, somebody that works at meetings. The worst case scenario, I will have to box them. Doesn't matter how big they are. Sometimes I've gone with guys that are like 6'3", 240, 250, and then I get the worst of it. I'm not really that tall.
Good luck at that point.
I'm 5'3". I weigh like 165, 170. You know, I'm pretty thick, you know. And I get in a ring with everybody. I used to do up to 20 rounds a day.
It sounds like you certainly have the experience factor in your corner. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's the factor. From
a business perspective, right? When we talk about trying to get back to pre-pandemic, what do you think, if you guys could improve on one thing, is it marketing? Is it sales? Is it retention? What do you think is really going to make the big difference for you in your journey to making this business even bigger?
I think it's all three. Sales, of course, you want to be able to sell to the public, to have them come in. You got to look at it like this. Most people walk into it. Okay, I'm going to ask you, if you never box, you never train, what have you heard about boxing, especially boxing?
Not much.
Okay, so I'll put it in this better terms. So you go to a boxing gym.
Yeah.
You think fighters. You think, I'm going to box somebody. I'm going to get my butt whooped by somebody that I've, especially if you've never done it. So those things come in. So the difference between most gyms and myself, I try to make people feel welcome. Everybody says hello. Everybody greets everybody. Everybody says goodbye at the end, bump fist. And so we kind of have a friendly environment, even though you might have a couple kids trying to knock each other knock each other's heads in the ring. Yeah. So you'll see that. So
that's the real challenge with boxing gyms for the most part, is that, yes, of course we have are competitive fighters, but that's a very small population, and we definitely yes. can't pay the bills with them alone. We need that Gen Pop, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, who are coming in to learn the sport and use it to get a little bit fitter, a little bit stronger, a little bit healthier. And they can yes. come 52 weeks a year and pay their membership every single month at the same time. And we need those people.
Yes. And those and that's the great thing I try to do, is just I try to make them understand what to keep the capabilities on. You know, as long as they get, they're safe. That's the biggest thing, is about being safe. You know, you're going to have a broken nose here with some of the fighters, but you try to avoid that with a normal person.
Yeah.
9-to-5 person that wants to work, and they come here after work. So I get that. So that's what I
know. I don't know if normal person is the right tag, but at least most people don't want to get punched in the face. And so, Jorge, I mean, we've talked about how you started the business and where you came from. We've talked about what it looks like today and kind of the challenges that you guys have faced over the last 18 months. Talk to us about the future, man. What's the big picture? What's the goal in mind when it comes to running this business?
Running the business, I would probably like to grow something that we'll have a boxing gym and we'll have a fitness gym. All those weightlifting. I would like to have a big, my goal is to have basically a big warehouse that I could do everything. From the CrossFit to the weightlifting to the training athletes. I want to have a full-on facility plus a boxing gym. And the other thing is, you know, I want to get more involved with the business of the sport, meaning I want to create more talent. I want to create more futures for kids that don't get caught up in the corruption of boxing. That's another thing I'm trying to get involved. That there's always going to be little things here and there that you gotta go over. But at the biggest point is to create a future of these kids and create a positivity in their lives. Because a lot of kids out here, especially in today's society, they think boxing is violent. But like I always tell some parents, you rather have them in the street where there's actually more lethal, or to a sport that is, it could be progressive. So that's the difference from my mindset from then to now. So
yeah.
My whole thing is just to have a big...
There's certainly work to be done, right?
Oh yeah,
there's
a lot of work.
There's a lot of different things. I mean, you mentioned bigger location, adding in new services, focusing more on the youth, focusing more on the business of boxing and the politics of it in general. There's certainly a lot of things to be done, and man, it sounds like you're the man for the job for this. So Jorge, man, as we start to kind of wrap things up and bring an end to this interview, where can people find out a little bit more about your gym?
You can go to our website at www.flashboxinggym.com, or you can look at our Instagrams, you know, my personal Instagram as well, and at flashboxing_gym. My personal is Jorge Kid Flash, and those are the platform right there that we have. You know, you can see a lot what goes on in the gym. You see a lot of the training, the mitt work. So the progression of what we try to do. Like I said, the whole thing is about commitment. The biggest key word is commitment. And
Go ahead.
If people are willing to take the chance and risk a little bit, they can do whatever.
That's the perfect note for us to wrap this up, man. I really appreciate you and your contribution to the podcast. And it's always interesting to get people's mindset when it comes to how they run their business and what they're really shooting for. I can't thank you enough. And I wish you nothing but the best going forwards, man.
No, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure meeting you and a pleasure to have you be on the show.
Absolutely. And so to everyone who tuned in, we appreciate you as well. Don't forget, if you want to be notified about future episodes, hit like and subscribe. If you're interested in joining us to talk about your business model within the fitness industry, click the link in the description, fill it out. Our team will be in touch with you soon. And as always, until next time, Gym Lords out.
Thank you for listening to this interview, but don't go anywhere. We still have two more incredible interviews coming right up inside this episode. But if you're a gym owner that's looking to get more clients, keep them longer, and make more money, head to the link in the description of this podcast and schedule a free leave your credit card at home consultation with one of our business consultants. You see, here at Gym Launch, we've helped over 4,000 gym owners across the world increase their sales, take home more money, and build the business of their dreams. And it simply starts with a phone call. Click on the link in the description of this podcast to schedule your call today. Now, let's head into the next interview. Welcome to the Gym Lords Podcast, where we talk fitness business with gym owners who are in the trenches, doing work, changing lives in their area. I'm your host, Dominic. Today, I'm here with my guest, owner of Chip's 24-Hour Health and Racket Club in Gulf Breeze, Florida. Chip, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I am fantastic, sir. Another Monday, getting rocking and rolling for the week. Excited to hear on the air some of the stuff we talked about off the air and get into it. So give us the lowdown. What's Chip's all about?
Well, Chip's is a 24-hour facility that I opened in 1991. It's a family-oriented gym where everybody feels at home here. You have everything from middle school kids all the way up through elderly, because we're kind of a retirement community. And it's just a great place to come and hang out. We have a little bit of something for everybody with basketball, racquetball, volleyball, and of course, weightlifting. Then we have a bunch of different classes for everybody. So I think this is a great place for people to come up and get in shape and exercise and just, enjoy themselves.
Yeah. Sounds like in your community, I think you said that right where you are, there's about 15,000 people, and you've put a lot of things in place to basically be a one-stop shop for the majority of people's health and fitness needs in the area.
Correct. Yeah, we have a little bit of everything. I've been doing it for a long time, so I've kind of expanded over the years and kind of seen what works for me and what doesn't work. And we kind of push our main philosophy at our gym is a powerlifting gym. That's where we focus. Most of our clients come in to really we're probably the best powerlifting gym in within maybe 50 to 100 miles. So that's where our, kind of staple members are. And then we, of course, have a little bit of everything else for the average lifter that just wants to come in for like a 30-minute session and get in and get out.
Awesome, man. So, I want to dive a little bit more into that as we go, but this is your unique story in that you've been in business since you were in high school. I mean, most people, that we talk to, might have an inkling that they like sports or fitness in high school, but very few people have their hands in the pie, doing this thing that early. So if you could, I know you already told me a little bit off the air, go into that story of how it happened and, continuously basically being in business since about, 1991 is a really incredible path that you've had.
Well, and give you a bit more backstory that I don't think I told you earlier. My father was big into bodybuilding and powerlifting in the 60s and 70s. And that's kind of where I got my real start and love for lifting and exercising. So over the years, I would accumulate some equipment. And my mom had a warehouse at the newspaper company that she owned called the Sentinel Newspaper here in Gulf Breeze. And it was a big warehouse. And so I had all this equipment. I kept, increasing it. I made it like a little warehouse gym. And in the in 1990, she sold it. So I had all this equipment. And so I finally talked her into purchasing a small little unit for me in a little office park so I could store my equipment since we were losing that place. And she did. And so I had all my equipment in there. And I was just kind of, my friends and I were working out together and, just doing our own thing. And then my senior year, I decided to apply for a DCT program, Diversified Cooperative Training Program. It's like an on-job training where you go to school half the day and then the other half of the day, like at noon, you'd go to work somewhere and then you would have somebody follow you around, make sure you're doing the right thing, and they would report back to the teachers and you would, that would be your class grade for the second half. Well, I talked them into letting me open up my fitness center and see how it'd work, but I'd be my own boss as a high school student. And they were kind of, weren't sure if it was going to work or not. They said, well, we'll give it a try for one semester, see how it goes, because they thought I would just kind of mess around and not do anything. Well, it ended up, I found out I loved it and I really enjoyed, being there, and I loved all the people coming in and I loved the business. And so it kind of went great. So they said, okay, let's keep going. And then I graduated high school and went off to college. And at college, I was studying sports management. And then in the middle of that year, that semester, the first semester, I started realizing that I was already doing what I love to do. So mm-hmm. instead of like wasting my parents' money and wasting my time at school, I was like, I need to get back home to start running the business. So I, packed up after 1 year at Tulane and came home and started running my business. And then it's really kind of gone from there.
Gonna tell you, it takes a strong love of the business to probably, or maybe a strong love of anything, to tear someone away from the Tulane campus and the amazing city and college experience it could be in New Orleans, back then. But it's really, we hear so many people that will go and get a four-year degree in any number of things. And I'm a big proponent of education. And, people want to poo-poo the college degrees a lot these days, but people will go, and we hear the story all the time. Hey, I got a, an MBA, or I went to school for this and that. And they all say that, the on-the-job experience, especially in the fitness industry, the relationships, the job specific, far outweighs what they got in college. So you saw the writing on the wall early. You knew that you were getting that experience. You were able to, harness your love for the fitness side of things, your desire to grow and expand as a business owner, and just really hit the fast forward button on this thing. So kudos to you for having that foresight and, getting a head start, far, far above and beyond what most people do. So you get this thing rolling, it's the 90s. Some of our listeners probably weren't even born then. And, but for those who are, can you kind of give us an idea? Fitness looked very different in the early 90s than it does now. There have been some major trends, some big waves that have come and gone. What have been those big waves? How have they looked for you, and how have you managed to adapt, pick and choose what things you are going to identify with and still be here with us 30 years, couple recessions, economic crisis, pandemic, all these things later, and here we are talking?
Well, I guess I was kind of at the end of like the aerobics, the step aerobics craze, like the movie Perfect. That was really big. And the club that I bought, that's what their main goal was, in aerobics classes. And then when I came in business, we was switching more towards the machine part of, exercising. Like there were all these, Cybex probably started around the early 90s or late 80s. And then all these great machines started coming out. So everybody was like, loading their facility up with these, very expensive, very nice, great machines, like the end of like Nautilus. And then Cybex kind of was, probably the best in the business. And that's kind of where I was transitioning here is when that was happening. I wasn't big into the aerobics class, so I didn't have any classes at the time when I first opened. I just had machines, and then I had a small little, didn't even have a powerlifting area. I just had like a platform at the time, because we had three racquetball courts. All three racquetball courts were kind of busy in the early 90s. And then racquetball was starting to fade out. It was huge in the 80s, and then by the time we caught it at the tail end, it was kind of starting to die. So we've converted, we went from four racquetball courts to two now. And even one of them, we kind of have, it's half volleyball, half basketball. So it's not full on racquetball. And then we since converted one of our racquetball rooms into a powerlifting studio. So it's just dedicated for powerlifting only. So it's a kind of a special room where you've got these, a good term would be meatheads, you could call them. These big powerlifting guys could go in there, crank the music up, have the heavy weight, have the chalk going everywhere, slamming the weights down, making lots of noise. And then it still doesn't really affect the main part of the gym. So you have the quiet, more the retired couple that's going to come and do a little circuit around can still come in and get their circuit in and not have to worry about fighting these big meatheads for the equipment. And then the trend has kind of worked its way back towards like yoga classes and step classes. And, kind of that trend is kind of coming back now again, where spinning has gotten, really big in the last few years. So, you know, our spinning classes, you know, taken off. So we have a nice spinning studio. And then, of course, all the technology with aerobics has changed, aerobics machines. So, you know, first it was just a bike and a treadmill. Now you've got all the different kinds of ellipticals. Now you got step mills, you got VersaClimbers, you got air bikes, you got, you know, salt bikes, you got ski ergs, you got rowers. I mean, you got all sorts of cardio. So you have to, of course, keep up with that trend. And I'm constantly, you know, replacing, upgrading all of the different aerobics equipment to keep everybody happy. So we've been doing that too. So there's just lots of, you know, little trends, kind of, we got a little bit of everything up here. You know, we're trying to, you know, make everybody happy where they at least have something they feel comfortable with or something that they'll be motivated to come in the gym to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Amongst all of those, you know, you're in a place now where you're accommodating, you know, things that people are attending, people are interested in, that are working. Have there been any times along the way where you took the foray into adding something in the gym and it didn't really pan out, or maybe hesitated and didn't think something was going to catch on and had to come back and add it back in later? Timing-based decisions, any of those that, you know, could have went better one way or the other at the time?
Yeah, there's always different little things. I mean, you buy a piece of equipment, and at the time you think it's great and you spend a lot of money on it, and then later on, you know, a year later, you kind of realize it's a waste of money. Like one thing we bought years ago, and it was like, I think we spent like $8,000 on it, and at the time it was like so much money. But it was one of these, it was like a incline flat decline bench that was all attached, and you can, you know, move it all around. And I mean, since then, we've pretty much gotten rid of like all our benches. Now we just, you buy a power rack so you can do everything on it. You can bench, you can incline, you can shoulder press, you know, that kind of thing. I wish I would have gotten rid of the single purpose machines and gone with the multi-purpose machines that you can do lots of things with more. We've kind of learned that the hard way. So we went from having like four or five bench presses up here to having like seven or eight power racks now. And with the power racks, you know, you can, you know, being a lifter, you can do a little bit of everything on. Probably like spinning, I think, is one of the things that I didn't really, back when it first was getting, you know, big, probably in the mid 90s, I didn't invest in that as much as I probably should have. It's amazing how that has stayed and even gotten bigger, like with the Peloton bike coming out now. I mean, so many people are into spinning. It's such a huge, you know, source of income, and people really enjoy it. And I just, at the time, I was like, who wants to sit on a bike seat that many hours a day? I mean, that just, I can't even imagine it, you know. But I do love and enjoy watching the Tour de France, and I do ride my bike, but I just don't think of it as sitting in a room with somebody screaming at me to stand up on a bike, sit down on a bike, you know, that kind of thing. But people love it. And it's just one of those trends where I didn't think it was going to, you know, stay with us, but it's definitely stayed with us and even gotten bigger and bigger.
Yeah. Well, to your credit with spin, I think it came out and had a pop. And then there was a big lull for a while until companies like SoulCycle and Flywheel, Peloton, all that, they just pushed it hard enough that, you know, they made it an experience above and beyond just sitting on a bike. So you probably were right there to a degree. So, you know, it's one of those things where you got to be able to look back at the wins and the losses, the hits and the misses. But here you are now with a pretty well-rounded facility. So as far as management of the club goes, and we can get into this story a little bit more because I think it's interesting. You know, club starts, you know, you're in high school, you go away to college for a year, you're able to keep it running. And then, you know, a couple of years later, you end up, you know, through, I'm sure, a lot of hard work and in various stages, working with the Olympic bobsled team. So again, something else that's taking what sounds like a fair amount of your time, still keep the wheels turning, still keep the business healthy and growing. How have you managed to do that through those stages? You know, areas where your attention and your physical presence was somewhere else, but the gym kept, managed to keep rolling.
Well, originally when I opened the gym and then I went away to school, my father was actually in the middle of a transitioning in his career. They were going from a certain the same kind of career, but he went from like a desk job, a local job, to more of a traveling job. So that year away, he was able to help me run the business, and he, you know, stayed there and kept it going. So then after I came home, another thing that also I kind of transitioned to, and I don't claim to be the first, but I was definitely probably early, was one of the first. I was the first one to make myself or make the gym a key gym. So in 1991, when I opened, a lot of people, you know, like I said, I was going to school from, you know, 8 till noon, and then I would show up at the gym like at 1 o'clock after lunch. And then I would stay there till 8 o'clock at night. And then there was a lot of people like, hey man, I'd like to come in, you know, 6 in the morning, 5 in the morning. And I was like, why, you know, I can't be here. So finally I started making keys for everybody and people that I trust, and I'd give them a key. And then of course that became a big headache, changing keys out or changing the door and lock. And, you know, so then I came up with a system of having a little keypad. And this is way before proximity. I mean, we're talking even prior to computers. I mean, there's computers, but you didn't have computers like they have now where they can run a door system. So it was like a little keypad, you know, like you've seen it places. So you could give out codes, but it only had a limit of like 10 or 15 codes I could put in it. So I just pretty soon just started giving everybody the same code. And then each month I would change the code out, and that became a hassle. So, hey, you know, it's the first of the month, here's the new code. And then of course, anybody can give a code to anybody. So I was having to work with that dilemma of like, you know, controlling who was coming to the gym, who had the code, that kind of stuff. And then we, of course, all these different companies started coming out with these proximity keys. So then I switched to the proximity key system where you can control it. There's one key. They have to have the key to come in. You can turn the key on and off, and it's, you know, a piece of cake. And so that was, I was trying to make the gym, once I moved to this bigger facility, and then I started bobsledding, trying to make it completely as self-sufficient as possible. Once somebody signed up, they got a key, and then they could come in when they wanted to. We would set them up on an auto pay, so we wouldn't have to worry about the payments. You know, so over the years, that's probably been my biggest change, is trying to make the gym completely self-sufficient. I'm actually in the process of opening another location right now. It'll be open in May 1st, and we're making that one completely self-sufficient, where you log into a website, you go into our gym on our website, you sign up, you get a QR code reader, or you get a Bluetooth reader for your phone. And once you're paid, then you can go to the door, use your phone, get in the gym, and you're ready to go. We don't even need anybody to run it. So that's where I think the trend is slowly going in this industry, is making everything where it's automated, where you can, you know, kids can come in here, they can actually pay with everything with Apple Pay on their phone. If they want to pay for something, they can, you know, cancel their membership, they can sign up, they can add a friend, they can pay for a daily, they can do everything they want. You know, everything's at your fingertips of your phone. And that's kind of where we're trying to make it so it's easier for the person to sign up and cancel if they wanted to. We don't lock anybody into anything. I've always thought that that's kind of a red flag for other businesses. When you really lock them into a year, or you lock them into, you know, 30 days, you got to cancel before you're ready to leave. And then it's a crazy cancellation fee. You got to make it easier for them to cancel. That means they'll want to come back faster. If you make it hard for them to cancel, they don't want to come back as fast.
Yeah, I think, you know, I heard somebody recently say, and I'm going to paraphrase here because I'll probably butcher it, something about loving somebody as much on the way out as you did on the way in.
I love that. Yeah, that's exactly how we treat them here. I make it as easy as possible. All they have to do is they have to give me 1 day notice. They just send me an email. Actually, the new facility, they'll do it all, you know, they'll have their own little portal. They have their own app. They can go in and just turn it off, turn it on, however they want to do it. You just have to, you know, make it, I mean, don't make it difficult. It's not like you're, you know, trying to lock them into, you know, they're not buying a car from you. They're not, you know, buying a house. It's not like a mortgage payment. It's just, it's a facility, and something happens. They get injured. You know, they're leaving town. Like I said, we're in a big kind of retirement community, but we're also in a big tourist industry area. So a lot of people are coming and going. We have a lot of military that float through this area. We have one of the largest bases, or probably in this whole area. We have, you know, Eglin, NAS. So all these different people are coming and going. You just have to, you know, make them want to come back. And then when they do finally come back, it's like, oh yeah, I remember that gym. That was great. You know, it made it easy for me to come and go. They didn't give me a hassle about leaving. and they'll want to join back up. And I think that's what's been a big success for me, is making it where people can, you know, sign back up easy. They can, you know, they're not locked in anything, and it makes them a little bit, you know, less hesitant in signing up. Like, they don't want to be burned like they've been burned before.
Yeah. Anything you can do to remove friction and give people one less reason to not, you know, look at any other clubs in the area. It's like, hey, we've got everything you need. We're friendly. We're community based. We want you to sign up. What's the catch? What happens if I have to leave? I don't, just let me know that you want to leave. We'll shake hands. We'll be friends. And hopefully we'll see you back at some point soon. And that's it. You know, I think anything you can do where someone doesn't feel like there's a catch, it puts you ahead in business these days, because there's always a catch with everything, it seems. So I like your take on that. So I have a kind of an idea of the gym, your backstory, what you're doing. I appreciate you sharing that you have, you know, another location coming on board. Just one quick question on that, really, because I want to talk a couple about your best practices, but proximity, is the new location, is it, you know, on the peninsula? Is it similar, you know, area where it is? Are you mainland Pensacola? Where's the new location coming on board?
The new location is going to be about 12 miles away. Like I said, our area is exploding. It's booming. And we have a high school here that is just busted at the seams. And then there's another high school that's about, say, 20 miles away. So there's nothing in between those, you know, 20 miles. And in the middle of all that, there's this community that's just, you know, going gangbusters. So there's a new high school coming in about 12 miles away. And that area is called Midway. And it's actually Midway from Gulf Breeze to Navarre. So that's the Midway. So that's why they named it Midway. So there's going to be Midway High School. I believe that's what they're going to call it. But it's going to be about 3 years that will be open. And my location to the high school here, and that's why I think I do so well, is I'm almost directly across the street. The high school is like walking distance for the middle school kids, the high school kids. They all just walk over here after school. So I have a big presence there. And as soon as we heard about this high school going in, we found out about it about a year ago. And I've been in the process of wanting to open up, for another gym for a long time. And I had one of my people that I buy all my equipment from, he's been kind of bugging me about wanting to open up a gym with him, because he always has so much equipment. He's like, I've got all this equipment. I just got to do something with it. I can't, you know, sell it fast enough. I need to, you know, do something. So he and I, and then actually another gym owner about 45 minutes away, are all coming together in this Midway area and open up a location. So it's 12 miles away from me. It's on the peninsula. It's going to be right next door to where the high school is going. So it's a great location, and it's going to be a great experience. We're 95% done, ready for the open. We just have to do a couple of fine tune things, like getting the whole door system up and running. Once the door system's up and running, I think we'll be ready to go, and we'll have another location.
Awesome, man. Awesome. While we have a couple of minutes left here, I want to get, you know, quick take from you on a couple of things that always come up. So I'm sure you've gone through a million different versions of everything I might ask you. But for you, first and foremost, the question we get asked the most, marketing, new client acquisition, what do you find is the most effective thing for you to get new people in the door?
The number one thing I've always found over the years is word of mouth. I mean, you can do all the advertising you want, but when a friend tells another friend, hey, this is a great place, you need to come try it out, or a family member, that's always the number one. Every person that comes to this door said, I heard it from a friend, or, you know, a family member, somebody told them about it. And then maybe later they were reassured and they see some advertising of some sort. And we do very, very, very little advertising. We have, you know, local papers here that we'll advertise in occasionally. And then, you know, now with social media, that's kind of changed the whole advertising platform. You just do all your own advertising. You don't even have to advertise. You just make a post. It's free. Make a post. It looks like an ad, you know, so that's kind of changed everything. Especially my parents, like I said, they were in the newspaper business. And, you know, before, you would have to, you know, get these contracts and put an ad in, and you leave it in there for a certain amount of time. And now, I mean, the paper industry is kind of dead. There's hardly anybody reading the paper anymore. I mean, everybody's on their phones, just scrolling and swiping and, you know, looking at things that way. So I think the best form of advertising is obviously word of mouth. So making happy for people, you know, once they're in here and they're telling other people about it. But then just doing, you know, simple posts and, you know, if it's Instagram or if it's LinkedIn or if it's Facebook or whatever, whatever kind of post that way. I think that's a, occasionally, like if I have an event coming up, I might pay for some advertising on one of those platforms to try to reach out to, you know, some other people. But I think just word of mouth is the best.
Absolutely. All right. And then the last thing, staffing, and I'm sure we could do a whole episode on this, but again, I'm sure you've tried a million different things. You know, as far as getting desk staff, trainers, whatever type of other help, right now, you know, in the midst of this nationwide staffing crisis, we're not immune in the fitness industry, but, you know, whether it be right now or over the years, where do you find your highest ROI is for time, energy, investment in finding good people to come and work in and for your facility?
Well, that's a good question. I've just been blessed that I've just had great trainers that have wanted to be here. They kind of know the environment that we have and have built. And so, I mean, to be honest with you, I kind of have like trainers like beating down my door wanting to train here that I won't allow because there's only so many clients to go around and I don't want to oversaturate with trainers. So I keep, you know, just a handful. We have like about 10 or 12 trainers right now. And out of those 10 or 12, there's probably eight that are full-time. And out of those eight trainers that are full-time, there's like a handful of them, like four of them that are kind of like my right-hand men, where if I'm not here, they'll take care of things. Somebody comes in the door, they'll show them around, they'll talk to them, they'll show them how to sign up, they'll send them to the website because everything is virtual. You don't even have to come in, you know, there's no paper. So they would, you know, hand them things and get them going. So you just have to, and another big thing, I guess, in keeping the trainers happy is I let them keep 100% of their income. I don't take a percentage. So that's a big philosophy that I do. So since I've always been a trainer, I just never thought it was fair for the gym owner or the gym to take a percentage of, you know, my income that I've worked for. So I don't do it to them. They can make it 100%. You know, they make as much as they want or as little as they want. You know, it's all up to them. And I don't do any control of the appointments. They handle all their own appointments. They do all that. So I just try to keep a good niche of trainers that control themselves and them also. Another good source of advertising is with them. They're promoting themselves and they're promoting themselves in this gym. And in this gym, it's, you know, it's just kind of a snowball effect that, you know, keeps it helping each other, getting more people in the gym and building our clientele.
Yeah. Sounds like the truest version of the Field of Dreams, Kevin Costner, if you build it, they will come. You've made this facility that's welcoming, that's positive, that has a good environment, that, you know, just is attracting, sounds like, the best and the brightest in the area. And if they're beating down your doors and you're at a point where you can say no, I think that's a good position to be in. So good for you on that. So last question I'm going to hit you with before we're going to let you go. You've been in this business a long time, and I'm sure it's hard to distill it down to one or two sound bites here, but any big lessons you've learned, guiding principles, inflection points, anything where you feel like, you know, something that you've just kept with you has helped to keep you in the game and successful, you know, other things have popped up, gone away since you've been there. You're still standing here 31 years later and, you know, expanding. Sounds like, you know, the rocket ship is full of fuel. Anything that you can really attribute that to as a guiding principle or lesson?
I think one of the biggest thing is listening to your customers, keeping all your clients happy. When a customer comes in and tells you they, you know, wish you had something or they want something and you just kind of ignore them and never get it, that kind of thing, I think hurts the business. So I think keeping all your equipment running properly, clean, looking good, keeping the, you know, environment happy. It's not like a dungeon that you walk in and it's not, you know, dreary. It's a happy place to be. So people want to come up here. And then just keep everything, you know, everything going. Don't leave your equipment down. Don't leave it, you know, looking bad. Don't leave it broken. Try to take care of everything. So it's imagine if you went to Disney World and, you know, half the rides weren't working, you know, would you want to go back the next time? Probably not. But if you go to Disney World and everything's up and running, everything's perfectly crystal clean, you enjoy being there. And that's kind of the same environment in the gym. People want it, you know, they want it clean. They want everything working. and they just want a, you know, happy environment. I think that's what we try to keep here.
Awesome, man. Yeah, that the Disney reference hits hard. If, you know, there's been many books written about it, you know, the Disney experience, the Disney standard. It's a high standard to hold yourself to, but, you know, if you shoot for the stars and you miss, you still land on the moon, you're in good company, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, sir. That is all the time that we have here today. For everybody out there listening, if they want to find you, chips24hourhealth.com, anywhere else they should look for you out on the electronic universe?
Yeah, they can, of course, Instagram, we're chips24hr. Facebook, we're, I think, you know, chips24hr. And then Twitter. We're on all the social platforms, you know, that's out there. And of course, we have some YouTube channels. You could look for us there. And we have a few old videos. I haven't posted a video on YouTube in a while, but we're out there.
Awesome, sir. Well, I appreciate you spending some time this morning with us. It's been a pleasure having you. I wish you continued success.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. To everyone out there listening, as always, we appreciate you. Wouldn't be here without you. We hope you found value and inspiration in this episode. If you'd like to hear more, click the subscribe button. We'll notify you when new episodes drop. To everyone out there in Gym Lords Nation, keep working hard, keep changing lives. Gym Lords out.
Thank you for listening to the podcast so far. Don't go anywhere. We still have another episode coming right up right after this word from one of our sponsors. The Gym Lords podcast is sponsored by Prestige Labs. Prestige Labs is the first and only nutritional supplements company built by gym owners for gym owners. Prestige Labs solves the problem that all gyms have experienced, the broken inventory model, low commissions, and even lower quality products. Prestige Labs provides 100% drop shipping, zero inventory, PhD formulated high quality supplements for you and your clients. The goal is simple: cover 100% of your rent while never sacrificing your integrity. To learn more or to become an affiliate of Prestige Labs for free, apply at affiliate.prestigelabs.com. That's affiliate.prestigelabs.com. Double your client results, double your income. You can head to affiliate.prestigelabs.com to become an affiliate for free. Now stick around for the rest of this episode.
Use coupon code GYMLORDS on PrestigeLabs.com for 20% off all future supplement orders.
What's up, Gym Lords? Welcome back to another episode of the Gym Lords podcast. My name is Bree. I will be your host today, and I am here with Jermaine from Five Star Fitness in Birmingham, Alabama. What's up, Jermaine? How are you today?
I'm good. What's going on with you, Bree?
Not much. Doing well. Glad to have you here. Thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
All righty. Awesome. So let's jump into the details here. How did we get started with owning our own gym? What made you want to own your own facility?
It started off with my son. He wanted to play ball. Me being a former football player, basketball player, athlete, I actually started training him. That's how I got into athletic training. So it all started with athletic training. And from there, it just took off to boot camps, one-on-ones, personal training, small group.
So awesome.
He was the foundation there.
That's great. So how old is he?
He's 23 now.
23. Oh my goodness. I never would have guessed that looking at you.
So he was eight at the time, I think.
Okay. All right. Wow. So he was the inspiration for you for the business originally. And now it's grown across the years. Now you've been able to maintain the facility, so that's good. Now, what types of services are you offering now within the facility? So you've still got the athletic piece, I'm sure. Are we doing general fitness, general population fitness training?
Yeah, we're still doing the athletic. It's probably more so of us, you know, going to the actual school now. Still doing general, you know, with COVID, that's a little hard for people to come in the building, but our general has turned into online. We still do have people that come in for our boot camp class, but that's about it. We still on it.
Yeah. Okay. So how much of your membership transferred to an online platform because of COVID, would you say?
Oh man, probably about before COVID, we probably was 80-20 in person. Now we're probably 90-10 online.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So most of the membership has transferred to online now.
Right.
So how is that working within the facility? So now like 10% of your membership is actually coming into the facility. So I'm guessing that the semi-private or group sessions that you maybe were offering before are either smaller, or how are you structuring things now within the facility? Well, because the number of people is so much smaller now.
Right. We had several classes in person.
Okay.
So what we did, we scaled, you know, when COVID hit, we scaled to only one class in the facility. And probably in one-on-ones. So, and everything went online. So we, cause at that time, you know, we couldn't be open.
Right.
Like, you know, we was actually shut down. We couldn't even open the doors. So everything went online. And when they gave us a chance to open up the doors online, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
So I actually said, I'm gonna ride it out to see where it goes. And it's actually been doing well.
Got it. Okay. So now, is there the potential there to transfer completely to online and no longer have the brick and mortar facility, or is that not really something that you would want to do?
It's something I thought about, but with me doing a lot of individual athletic training, I'm not sure if I really want to. With everybody being online, it doesn't hurt the business.
Right.
You know, per se. We actually probably grew more online during the pandemic than we did when pre-pandemic, which is crazy.
Yeah, it is.
We probably covered the Southeast, Alabama, Georgia, little parts of Florida. Now we're from Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Texas, California, Ohio, Chicago, North Carolina. So, I mean, which allows me to, you know, train more athletes. So I've actually got more athletes versus online. We having to go online. I've actually retained more athletes coming in and wanting me to train them one-on-one versus, that's why it's a hard decision to close the building, because it's still very, very, very beneficial.
Yeah, 100%. Now it's like that online piece is just another stream of revenue.
Right.
Where you can still maintain the facility, and even having those online memberships helps to cover the overhead as well, even if you don't have as many people within the facility.
Most definitely. I mean, we it was probably 2 years we were actually working on the online before the pandemic hit, because it was a lot of different things I was trying to do online. So it took a while for me to put it all together, but I put it together in probably one weekend, got it to a point to where it's at now, and I'm still not satisfied with it, but it's at a point right now where it's like, wow, I'm surprised that it did.
Yeah, that's awesome. So now, not being satisfied with where it's at now, what would you change, or what are you looking to change?
At the time, the goal was to do a whole lot of different things, offer different spot-specific classes, along with, you know, that full body workout.
Mm-hmm.
So you could go, you know, from a full body workout with your heart rate still up and go to that spot-specific class. I train a lot of women. So. Yeah. You know, it's certain areas they want to keep, certain areas
that they don't.
That they don't. So, you know, we I wanted to provide them with a little extra.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the case.
Okay. So it's more of just like a programming thing adjust. Okay.
And I didn't want it just to be me teaching the class. So, you know, it was going to be, you know, different trainers, especially ones up and coming instructors. You know, I'm all about helping everybody. So, you know, if it could benefit them, you know, put their name out.
Absolutely. So now, are you doing classes, the online portion, are you doing that through Zoom? How are you delivering the material to your clients?
We actually do Zoom. But we're probably going to transform to an app where you can do classes live online through the app.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is going to be geared towards the app.
Okay. All right. To kind of keep everything in one place and provide more structure there.
Right.
Cool. Okay. And now, as far as your membership goes, how do you structure your membership? Are people paying on a monthly basis, a weekly basis? Are they buying packages? How does that work?
We have a monthly package, and we have we'll call it the 21-day package.
Okay.
So it's, you know, 21 days. They say, you know, starts a habit.
Right.
So, of course, you know, monthly is good, but it's the 21-day package that gets the people in.
Yeah, absolutely. And is that like a challenge style kind of thing? Yeah.
It's called 21 Days of Hell.
Oh. That sounds great. That's really what gets people in the door, huh?
Yeah, 21 days of hell. You can know what gets them in is 21 days for $21.
Yes. Okay. So now with that program, are you also offering, so I'm guessing there's some type of training component there. And then is there nutrition and accountability as well? What does that look like?
So we have a private group that we put all the members in and we hold them accountable. You get I'm not a nutritionist, but you do get a meal guide. That I've, you know, personally come up with myself. Mm-hmm. And in our group, you know, we have conversation, we talk amongst each other, and some of the accountability is posting what you eat.
Yes. Yeah, that's big. Most people, what they really need is the accountability piece.
Yes, yes. So, you know, you have to post what you eat. If you don't post what you eat, in my eyes, you're not doing right.
Right.
So I'm gonna get on you.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm going to get on you in front of everybody. You know, we are family. So
that's right. You're all in it together. So that's right. Okay. So now with that, that's typically a front end offer like that is really good to get people's attention, get them started on a program, get them invested in what it is that you're doing. Now, of those people that are signing up for that program going through that 21 days of hell, how many of those are converting into monthly paying members after that?
So the thing was, when we was pre-pandemic, you could only do 21 days of hell 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had to convert over to monthly.
Right.
With online, I know it's kind of hard. So we went to 3 months. And the conversion rate is better than what I thought. We probably have about 150 sign up a month. By the end of that third month, where it's time to go to monthly, we have a conversion rate of probably about 80%.
Okay. All right. So that's some pretty solid growth there happening.
So every month we have people converting to monthly.
Exactly. Yeah. So you keep it running.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so that constantly feeds new leads coming into the program and converting into memberships. It's constantly rolling. Yeah. So now, how many members are you currently serving across all the programs that you offer?
200 plus.
Over 200, yeah. Okay, yeah. And is there a certain number that you have in mind that you're looking to get to as far as membership base? Like, what would be ideal for you?
I mean, as I can.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can handle all of it.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
With a lot being online, is much more easier.
Yes.
Per se versus in person.
Right.
So that's online, being online is probably one of the best things.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it takes less of your time. You're able to serve more people, you know, just with the accountability piece, making sure that they're sticking to their program, providing that level of service for more people at a time, because you're not tied up every hour in personal training sessions, right? Because there are only so many hours in the day.
And yeah, so all my personal training switched to the morning.
Yeah, right. And then you're able to just check in with your online clients in the later part of the day. And
right.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good setup. So now, as far as getting the word out there about the programs that you do offer, how are you going about doing that? Are you doing paid advertising through Instagram, Facebook, Google, things of that nature? Or how are we getting the word out there?
It's crazy because I've been doing this 18 years and I've never paid for advertising.
Never paid for advertising.
I have did like Instagram, Facebook ads.
Yeah.
But you know what? I haven't done it for the fitness part. I haven't. I've never paid for an ad. It's always been word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And doing the 21 Days of Hell, I have this thing where you can bring a friend.
Okay.
So you bring a friend one day. I mean, if I get 30 people to bring a friend, I get a conversion rate of 10 to 12 people signing up for the next month. You know, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, absolutely.
And it's just, you know, especially in Birmingham, it's just been word of mouth. Like I've probably trained thousands of people in the city. And basically it was just, they have been my billboard
over
the years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been the case. I've never paid for radio advertisement, never.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been the word of mouth of social media, Instagram, Facebook.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the paid advertising through Facebook was what was a game changer for me and my business, just as far as getting more people in the door, into the facility, getting more attention. But yeah, I mean, that's a huge, huge thing when you have such a solid base of referrals and word of mouth that you can rely on. That's, you know, that's the biggest piece when it comes to referrals and word of mouth. You can't really rely on it on a monthly basis, mm-hmm. just because it's unpredictable. You know,
eventually
people only know so many people in the area. So sometimes you have to go outside of that. Now you being online has helped because you don't have to now know people in the area. So that helps you to expand, reach more people, serve more clients as well.
Bring a friend online has been probably the best advertisement ever.
Yeah.
Because people reach out to friends who they went to college with they may stay in Atlanta. They reach out to somebody in California, Texas.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I have people that I went to school with, you know, college with, that's reach out to me like, hey, I want to join. And they're in Chicago, they're in Ohio, they're in Texas, they're in North Carolina, DC. So, and they've always over the years wanted to train with me, but
mm-hmm.
I wasn't online to that degree. So now they have a chance and they've joined.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So now, big time of the year right now for planning for what's to come in 2022, what our goals are, kind of taking a look at the business. So what are your main focuses for 2022? What are you looking to accomplish in this year?
2022 is basically that app that I talked about. It's a lot of different things, a lot of different components that I want to do with the app. I mean, of course, the basic things, you know, offering the programs, but I'm in a position to where a lot of people are asking me about where do I start? How do I start? So one component with the app is, you know, trying to help people who want to get become an instructor, trainer, you know, in position. That's really my main goal. And just keep growing as usual. So that's it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so yeah, a better structure for your online program so that you can make it more scalable, grow there, bring on some trainers to be able to help out on the fulfillment side with the clients that you're gaining there. So continued growth, essentially.
Of course.
Overall, always, right?
Yeah. We're trying to grow every day.
Right. Yes, absolutely. As everyone should be, right? Everybody should be focused toward growth and getting better every day. So I love that. Now, one thing that I always love to ask every gym owner that I speak with is if you could provide a piece of advice for somebody who is considering opening their own facility, doing their own thing, what would that be?
Patience.
Yes.
Patience. You have to be patient. You have to be patient because when I started when, you know, fitness wasn't popular. And now it's very popular. Everyone's wanting to do it. So you have to understand the market that you're in and your target audience that you're gonna be advertising to. And you have to be patient and stay steady, knowing that eventually they're going to come. You can't just jump out the gate and just, oh, we're going to do it. You know, it's about, you know, build yourself first and everything else will come.
Yeah, absolutely. Love that. Awesome. All right. So now, as we start to wrap up here, where can the listeners find you on social media?
Oh, you can find me at IG. You can find me at Get Five Star Fit, Jermaine Mobley on Facebook. You can find me at our Facebook page, Five Star Fitness. I'm very reachable. Everything is public.
Yes. Perfect. All righty. So Jermaine from Five Star Fitness in Birmingham, Alabama. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. It's been awesome having you on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. I appreciate that you'd have me on. Don't know work to work.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And to all the listeners out there, make sure that you subscribe so that you'll be updated on future episodes of the show. In the meantime, keep killing it out there and we will catch you on the flip side. Gym Lords out.
Thank you so much for listening. If you found this content valuable, here's four ways we can help you grow your gym for free. One, grab a free copy of Alex Ramosi's best-selling book, Gym Launch Secrets, at alexsbook.com. Two, join our free Facebook group at alexsgroup.com. Three, if you're a gym owner, you can apply to be on the podcast by emailing us at podcast@gymlaunch.com. Four, leave us a 5-star review so we can gain access to more gym owners and bring those lessons back to you. And as always, tap that button and subscribe to this podcast for more.